It is 93.3 WMMR in our great city of Philadelphia. I'm guilty of being Dracky Bam Bam. And on the line with us, we have a very special guest tonight, Frankie Previtt. Frankie was the leader of a great 80s, Jersey blue-eyed soul band, Frankie and the Knockouts. And they're about to release Frankie and the Knockouts, the complete collection, which is basically three CD set, includes rare studio and live tracks and all three of their original albums. And most importantly, and I like this, $1 from each album goes to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network in memory of Patrick Swayze, and it's available for pre-order right now at FridayMusic.com. Frankie, it's an honor to talk to you. Good evening, man.
Good to be here, Jackie. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, this is great. Bring us up to date now. The reason why we're putting this out, we mentioned for a good cause. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
I had the pleasure of meeting Patrick Swayze at the Academy Award. He kind of gave me a feeling of what the song meant to him and meant to the movie Dirty Dancing.
Now, let's go back a step. You wrote three songs or two songs for the soundtrack?
Well, I wrote two songs. I've had the Time of My Life and Hungry Eyes.
See,
and
people don't know that. They know Eric Carmen did it, and of course, from the Righteous Brothers.
Bill Medley and Jennifer Warren did Time of My Life.
But you wrote those songs, Frankie.
I co-wrote those songs. I did. Wrote the lyrics. I wrote the melody to those songs. And meeting Patrick was really kind of something that really hit home, touched my heart, because he told me how much the songs meant to the movie and to him personally. They filmed out a sequence, so they filmed like the last scene first. And he said, we didn't really have a song. So we were kind of bummed out. We really didn't love this movie. We just wanted to really get it over with. And we had listened to 149 songs, and we turned them all down, and we're getting ready to film the last scene. That last cassette came in, the 150th cassette, and it was your song. And he goes, so we looked at each other and we go, we're making the movie to that song. And at the end of the day, after we filmed, we had such a tremendous ending. He says the camaraderie for the actors was like a 180, and we're like, let's go make this movie. So I thought, you know what, when Patrick passed away, that I wanted to do something. And so I called, and I found out where Lisa Swayze, his wife, was donating her time. And I found out it was the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And so I told them, I'd like to do something, and I have an idea, and I'd like to put these two demos. I sang the demos of Time of My Life and Hungry Eyes that they filmed the movie to with Rochelle Capelli. I just said, let me put them out and let me see if I can raise some money for pancreatic cancer. Well, I've been able to give them, you know, raise about $30,000.
That's great.
With those demos. And so I'm doing the same thing with the Frankie and the Knockout box set. I'm taking some of the proceeds from that and I'm donating it to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network in Patrick Swayze's memory. I just think it's the right thing to do. If we all gave a buck, we could probably beat this disease.
Cancer sucks, and I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
Jimmy Einer, the great producer, he's the one that connected you with the movie Dirty Dancing and got these songs to the right artist. Is that how that happened?
Well, you know, speaking of Jimmy Einer, he's my mentor. So he was the president of Millennium Records, which signed Frankie and the Knockouts.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the guy that shut his label down, and for 2 years I was out of a record deal writing songs when I got a call 2 years after he closed the label to ask me to write a song for this little movie. And I told him, Jimmy, I don't have time. I'm trying to get a record deal.
Yeah.
And he goes, make time. This is going to change your life. I'm like, yeah, you're going to change my life.
Yeah.
Right, like you did 2 years ago. And he goes, no, I got a good feeling about this movie. And I go, you know, I said, what's the name of the movie, Jimmy? So Jimmy says, Dirty Dancing. I'm thinking, oh, man, Jimmy's doing porn.
Yeah.
Jeez. And he goes, no, I got a good feeling about this. He goes, I'm telling you. He goes, the good news is you got a chance to write a song for a movie. The bad news is it's got to be 7 minutes long because that's the last scene of the movie. So I'm thinking MacArthur Park. I got to write MacArthur Park.
That or Stairway to Heaven or something.
Something. So I called the guy that I wrote Hungry Eyes with, which was a song that was on my demo reel trying to get this next record deal.
Oh.
At John D. Nicola. And I said, John, we got a chance to, you know, write a song for this movie, Dirty Dancing. And I said, you know what? It's got to be 7 minutes. So let's start the song slow. And then on the downbeat of the verse, we'll double time it. So he sends me a track and I'm on the way, you know, record another song. I'm on the Garden State Parkway, exit 140. And I jam when I write a song to the track. And I'm in the car, and I'm jamming in and I'm of my life, going in and I'm of my life. What the hell am I saying? And I'm scribbling time of my life on an envelope. And wow. Really, I didn't know really anything about this movie, except that the man upstairs wrote the song, because I didn't have a script. You know, Jimmy gave me a 5-minute description about Boy Meets Girl and the Catskills and the father don't like the kid. I wouldn't have wrote Time of My Life because it was out of my wheelhouse as an artist. You know, songs like Hungry Eyes and Sweetheart and Without You are more poppy rock songs. And that's kind of my genre of writing. So I always say the man upstairs wrote this song.
Keith Richards always says those antennas are always up and they're grabbing songs and you never know when they're going to come to you.
That's the truth. That really is. But it found a home, you know, and it found the home in the right place. The stars were aligned, you know, Patrick Swayze, a movie, and my song all hit at the same moment and touched the right chord. You know, RCA and Best Run Films, when Time of My Life first came out, weren't on the same page. So RCA put out Time of My Life and a couple weeks goes by. It's like RCA is trying to work the record and calls Best Run and where's the movie? Oh, we forgot to tell you. We're going to cancel the movie for about a month and put it out in a month. So RCA tells Best Run to take a walk and Best Run puts the film out and now there's no RCA. There's no nothing. And they were going to put it out for 2 weeks and then go directly to DVD. Well, within that 2-week period, 300,000 records were back ordered. And before RCA could press a record, 1 million records got back ordered. So what happened was that the public, Everyday Joe, made that film, made that Time of My Life popular. So it's really the people's song and had really not too much else to do with anything else but the people liking the song and embracing it. I always say without Patrick, without the song, and without Jennifer, those three things created the phenomenon of Dirty Dancing.
It was magic. Everything was lined up right there.
It really was. It really was, Jackie.
Wow. So let's go before you formed your band, Frankie and the Knockouts. You were in a rock band called Bull Angus, and you toured with Rock and Rod Stewart and the Faces?
Yeah, you know, we called the band Riff Rock. We were Bull Angus, and we were just a band out there rocking, and our manager called us one day and just said, guess what? Next Saturday night, you're playing with Rod Stewart, and Mercury Records decided that, you know, that they were going to get us and put us on tour. We did a couple of months with Rod Stewart and then went out with Deep Purple and then Fleetwood Mac and did this festival right after Woodstock, about a year or two after, called the Pocono Mountain Festival.
Okay.
At that festival, it was a 3-day festival with 300,000 people. When you have those kind of experiences, and this was in the 70s, you know, 71-2, in that time period, you have that experience that kind of like gives you this feeling of what success is and the jolt of, you know, wanting that success. And I just kept writing and writing. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, Bull Angus was my stepping stone to signing with Buddha Records after that.
So Bull Angus was signed to Buddha Records?
Yeah, I was, as an R&B artist. Wow. And Tony Camillo, who produced Gladys Knight and the Pips and Midnight Train to Georgia, he was my producer. Actually, recorded Midnight Train to Georgia in his basement in Belmead, New Jersey. And, you know, anytime I would write a rock song, Tony would put it in a drawer. And if I wrote an R&B song, we recorded. Frankie and the Knockouts is really the connection, the culmination of those two bands, this riff rock band and this R&B band.
Are you in touch? Did you start up any relationships with those bands that you said you toured with? You said Deep Purple, Rock and Rod Stewart. Are you still in touch with any of them, or did you have any connection?
You know, not really in touch with some of them, although I was writing songs with Dave Mason, was in Traffic, and Dave got asked to join Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called me up, and I moved out to California for a while.
Oh.
And did a Fleetwood Mac record with Dave Mason. That's the only group I can say, you know, Rod Stewart, we toured with them, so we partied with him, and same with Deep Purple, you know, we hung out with those guys. But afterwards, many years later, I got a chance to do a record with Fleetwood Mac.
Amazing. Frankie and the Knockouts, great, great North Jersey band, and it seems like all the North Jersey bands have this little connection with a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band, Bon Jovi, and it seems like your story is the same as Bon Jovi's. You did not have a band when you had a record deal, kind of like John, when he got a record deal, had to put a band together. What is the connection there? Can you tell us, Frank?
Well, the connection really is that the drummer in Frankie and the Knockouts was Tico Torres.
The Hitman.
Yes, and he was my heartbeat, you know, in that band. Tico, we finished the third record. When Jimmy closed his label, he sold us to MCA. Mm. And when we went to MCA, they were saying, we're going to make you sound like Night Ranger. And I said, well, why would you do that? You have Night Ranger on your record. Well, we're going to have Night Ranger's producer come in and mix one of the tracks, and we're going to put it out as your first single. So that was the kiss of death.
Yeah.
And radio wasn't ready for Frankie and the Knockouts to sound like Night Ranger.
Yeah.
And Tico called me and said, this young kid, I don't know, he's like 18, 19 years old, Bon Jovi, wants me to do a couple of demos with him. Do you mind if I do that? I said, no, man, go ahead. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
You know, Tico is with Bon Jovi for the last 25 years. And
any bad blood with John, between you and John, for stealing your drummer?
You know, it's funny because I met his road manager about 2 years ago at a restaurant, and he goes, you know, John used to follow you around Jersey. And I said, yeah, I remember him at a bunch of gigs. He goes, you know why we were there? And I go, because he liked the band? He goes, no, we're trying to steal Tico.
Are you still in touch with Tico? And he was best man at your wedding?
Yeah, he was. He was. I talk to Tico every couple of months. Mm-hmm. And we stay in touch. Just, you know, he's my brother. He's a good guy.
Oh, that's just a great story. So, Sweetheart, you did on American Bandstand, Dick Clark.
Yeah, that was a trip. You know, again, there was no band, you know, and yeah. We went in and there was three of us as writers and then a bunch of guys that I always did my demos with, you know, and so I'd call up, you know, the keyboard player, Tommy, or I'd call up, you know, Lee Fox, and we'd go do demos. You know, and then they'd go out and play with their band. And so I was watching TV, and this guy, Michael Kleffner, was managing us, who was the Starships manager.
Oh.
He calls me and goes, hey, watch the show Friday. It was like a show like Saturday Night Live, but it was on Friday night.
Right.
And he goes, my group, the Starships, going to be on. I said, yeah, okay. So I'm watching the show, and at the end, the guy comes on. He goes, and next week's special guest, Frankie and the Knockouts. I'm going, oh, dude. There's no band. So Michael calls me and he goes, what do you think? I go, Michael, I got to tell you, there's no band. He goes, it better have a band by next Friday. So I call up the guys that did the demos. You know, I hadn't gigged now in 2 years because I was just writing songs and, you know, recording. My first gig with Frankie and the Knockouts was live on television on Fridays. The second gig was American Bandstand with Dick Clark. The third gig was the next night, Solid Gold.
Oh, yeah.
Dionne Warwick, like the host of the show. And so Michael goes, okay, you got about 2 weeks to rehearse, and then you're going out with the Beach Boys. And then that was it. That was Frankie the Knockouts.
You're destined to stardom. So when you were shopping this tape, was the band already called Frankie and the Knockouts, or he made it up shopping your tape, or it was called Frankie and the Knockouts?
You know, there was a band I had tried to get a deal with, you know, just put guys together and, mm-hmm. and showcase. And we were called the Knockouts. And Jimmy said, no, I'm going to put your name in front of it. And I said, well, let's call the band Runner. I said, that's a better name than Frankie and the Knockouts. He goes, no, you're Frankie and the Knockouts.
And he dropped your last name, just Frankie and the Knockouts.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Tico was loving that.
Well, you know what? It was an opportunity for all of us. The first record, the drummer on that first record was Claude Lehenoff. And he was the guy who was doing some of the demos. The second and third record, that's when Tico came into the picture. And we had tried, we auditioned a bunch of drummers. And as soon as Tico came in the room, I knew in 2 seconds. I said, there's our heartbeat right there. There's our drummer.
The heartbeat, and John calls them like thunder sticks or something like that. An amazing, amazing drummer. So you're in North Jersey. Speaking of Bon Jovi, are you in the community? I'm sure you are, like Bruce, Southside Johnny.
I'm down the shore as well. You know, I'm mm-hmm. over in Oceanport, New Jersey.
Okay.
Right outside of Red Bank and about, I don't know, 5 miles from Asbury Park. And this whole Jersey scene, especially up here down the shore, more than anywhere I've lived, and I've lived in about 12 different places being a band boy. You know, the way that they embrace the musicians down the shore is totally different than any place I live. The people come out and celebrate music. And you could be, you know, an 18-year-old kid up to a, you know, 60-year-old musician, and people are coming to see you. And there's just a lot of good players down here. It's a really good place to live, and I hadn't experienced this kind of culture musically. And I know they're out there, you know, there's places that I've gone and played at, you know, Asheville, North Carolina, or down in Austin, Texas, in Nashville, in Atlanta. There's pockets of these places. There's that culture of fan base that still celebrates coming out to live gigs. And that's what I mean by celebrating the artists. They come out to their live gigs. And you don't have to be a big star. They just come out and celebrate that you're good, or, you know, want to support you.
The music community in North Jersey, and you're not too far away from Philadelphia, and I've had this conversation with many, many artists. I just think the way our competition, the way we put our bands together in Philadelphia and in North Jersey, the drive, and it's just a little bit different than other bands, yeah, like, say, on the West Coast.
I should have included Philly in that, because mm-hmm. we've played in Philly a lot. That same culture happens at Philly as well.
Did you ever play our now defunct The Spectrum, Frankie?
I believe I did with Rod Stewart.
Not Frankie and the Knockouts, though.
Yeah, okay. Bull Angus.
Did Frankie and the Knockouts tour with any major artists and come to Philadelphia?
Trying to think if we did. Not really.
Okay, you ever do Madison Square Garden up there with you guys? I'm sure you did the Stone Pony.
I played the Garden with Stewart.
You did?
Yeah, with Rod, yeah. But, you know, he played the Madison Square Garden every town he went to, so I really lucked out.
That is so great.
Who else was on that bill? Remember a band called Cactus?
Yes, yes.
There was Timmy Bogart and
Carmine Appice's friends, yeah.
Carmine Appice, yeah, Jimmy McCarty.
You call him Appice, I call him Appice. He always yells at me. He goes, Vinny's Appice, I'm Appice, Jackie.
That's funny. I grew up, my dad was an opera singer, so I was mm-hmm. hearing all the, you know, Italian notes all the time.
Okay. Mario Lanza, Riccio Caruso.
Yeah, that's it. So groups like the Rascals and Bill Medley, you know, and guys like that mm-hmm. were my inspiration for the blue-eyed soul kind of sound.
These days, you're keeping busy, of course, with this new project, the CD coming out, but you have a project, a new Broadway-style jukebox musical, 5 years in the making, called Calling All Divas.
I do, you know, and what's interesting about it, it's about four girls at different stages of their career who compete against each other in the first act to win the favor of this guy who's going to make one of them a superstar. He can't decide which one at the end of the first act after they all sing is the one he's going to pick. So he makes them a group called the Unforgettables, and the whole second act is the concert of the Unforgettables. And one of the girls, one of our divas, is Carol Riddick from Philadelphia.
Oh, what a great connection.
She's just unbelievable, as the other three girls are. One of the girls, Carol, plays the role of this blues singer in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Another girl is a session singer. Another girl is a country singer. And then the fourth girl is an actual 19-year-old subway singer.
How did you scout all this talent?
You know, it took me a while to really handpick the right four girls. And I wrote, you know, this book about this story. And mm-hmm. then finally, this guy, Michael LaFleur, who's our director, came on board, who directs shows and builds shows for like Celine Dion and Disney and Cirque du Soleil and Universal. And when Michael came on, he helped me design this show and write this show. And so where you know where you are on stages, you know, if you're in a subway, there's projection. I have projections and making you feel like you're in a subway.
Damn.
Or if you're in this blues club, or if you're in a recording studio, all this projection changes.
So has this played yet, Frankie? And you're going to take it out on tour early next year?
Yeah, we played a few gigs in New York. Mm-hmm. And we played like the Count Basie in Red Bank and,
right.
and a few places. But we've been talking to places like the Keswick Theater outside of Philly. And we're going to do Pittsburgh. They're setting a tour up for us.
Oh, that's amazing. We wish you all the best, Frank.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Jackie.
You're so welcome. And we do appreciate you for taking the time out of your day to pretend to be our friends here at 93.3 WMMR.
You're the best. Man, you are the best.
Frankie Previn from Frankie and the Knockouts, the complete collection, 3-CD set. Frankie calls it a box set. I definitely want to get my hands on one of these, including rare studio live tracks and all three of the original albums. And most importantly, which is really nice, $1 from the sale of every item goes to Pancreatic Cancer Action Network in memory of his friend Patrick Swayze from Dirty Dancing. And it's available now. You can pre-order it or you can get it at FridayMusic.com. Frank, we hope to see you in our great city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia. And again, all the best to you, man.
Thanks for having me, Jackie. Hey, everybody. It's Frankie from Frankie and the Knockouts with my friend Jackie Bam Bam on 93.3 WMMR down in Philadelphia. Good to be here.